Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Lobby.
Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
Hello, horror hounds, and welcome to Now Slaying, an It Slays podcast production where we break down the latest and greatest in the world of horror. I'm your not-so-humble host, Colton.
I'm Rowan.
And today on the show, we're joined by our foreign correspondent, Jill. So, Jill, say hello to the folks at home.
Hey, folks at home.
And today's a very special day for the show because I feel like I've been talking about this movie forever. Now, at least a couple of months it's been on my radar. But today we're going to be reviewing Skinamarink, which was released February 2nd, 2023 on Shudder after a limited run in theaters last month, a very successful run for a film of this size. But before we get into the review, Jill, I want to know, were you looking forward to Skinamarink?
I was, actually. I really did want to see it in a theater, but then it popped up on Shudder, so it made it easier for me. But yeah, I was pretty excited about watching it. What about you guys?
Was it available in your region, like to go to the theaters and see it? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was, which is interesting because it's a Canadian film. But yeah, it was doing pretty well down here, I think. I know people who went to go see it in theater. And I think, according to them, it's like the prime experience for this type of movie.
Yeah, I think there was only a handful of screenings across Canada, and they were like boutique screenings. Like, it never actually went to any like Cineplex stuff, really. So I never got a chance to check it out in theaters. But yeah, similar to yourself, this is one obviously that I've been looking forward to. And I know there's been a pirated copy floating around for a while that maybe one of us watched it that way in December, you know, Rowan. But yeah,
wow.
I wanted to wait until like it was officially released just in case anything changed, and also to kind of go in fresh just for the, you know, for the show. That being said, by the time I watched it, it was basically impossible to avoid kind of like spoilers for this thing. So I was seeing like all these like little posts and memes and whatnot about how scary it was all across social media. And then also the initial critical reception that was like super excited for this movie and like super high on it, followed by like the kind of the backlash of like, oh, it's quite boring, had me a little bit like more mixed about, you know, wanting to see it. Obviously, I still couldn't sit down. Couldn't wait to sit down and watch it, but I think I more or less knew what I was getting myself into by the time I sat down and watched it. What about you, Rowan? Obviously, you were quite excited. You watched it back in December, so.
Yeah, I was pretty excited that I, you know, was a bad boy, and I knew there was, like, a high-quality screener copy going around. I guess, like, if you were on the internet, like, this kind of went viral on TikTok and stuff, and that is why. Because of that, like, leak, so everyone kind of got a chance to see it. I thought it was interesting, because unlike most of these situations, the director, like, kind of embraced it, and, like, just was like, yeah, like, let's get this in people's eyes.
Yeah, I think at that time, too, they never had, like, an official release strategy or anything. Like, it was just kind of like, it almost seemed like a little forgotten film that was at a film festival and then leaked online.
Yeah, so. I was gonna say, yeah, exactly. So why not? So I saw it. You know, once we get into the spoiler free section, I might push back a little on Jill's friends on the best way to view this. But yeah, I was super excited about it. I know, you know, me and you, Colton, had been talking back and forth about this before, and yeah, it was on my radar. Everyone was talking about it, and I was just pumped to see it.
Yeah, and I think that's probably a good spot to leave it before we get into our thoughts on the film. So let's roll the trailer.
In this house, in this house, in this house, in this house. In this house.
what you just heard is from Skinamarink, written and directed by fellow Canadian Kyle Edward Ball, and the story is as follows. Two children wake up in the middle of the night to find their father missing, and most of the windows and doors in their home along with him. Now, here on Now Slang, we like to keep things spoiler-free up front before getting into the more in-depth spoiler-filled discussion, but also, like, Skinamarink's a little bit of a unique case where this is definitely more of an experimental horror film. So if you want to stay like 100% spoiler free, I kind of recommend listening to this once you've already seen the film. But with that being said, Rowan, what are your spoiler free thoughts on Skinamarink?
You know, you have to be very open to very experimental type films to watch this or want to watch this, I think. I remember seeing the trailer for the, when I saw the trailer originally for it, you know, at first I kind of thought it was just going to be like a Blair Witch found footage type thing. So, you know, I think definitely, I don't even know if we have enough time to really press how experimental and kind of art house this is. Cause like you said, it's kind of been getting that like backlash a little bit on the, now that it's been out.
Yeah, it's getting the criticism of, it's just a hallway. That's the whole movie. It's just a hallway.
Just a hallway.
So, yeah.
But, I mean, I think the visuals are really interesting in this. The camera angles are used, like, really smartly in order to evoke, like, uneasiness and emotion. I think if you kind of open yourself up to this, you know, you would be, like, pretty pleasantly surprised how it could make you feel. I will say in this section of it, this is where I'll kind of push back. I did watch this at home. I think that's probably the optimal place to watch it. I don't know how I'd feel in like a theater where this is kind of made to look like a home video almost. Like, so it kind of gave me, definitely not conceptually or like artistically, but it has that kind of idea of, like, if you're watching, like, an Unfriended, like, Unfriended, you know, really worked well.
What a comparison.
Well, I mean, Unfriended, you know.
Yes, I know what you're getting at.
Exactly. To me, it didn't really work in the theater, but worked really well if you're watching on, like, your iPad or your laptop, mm-hmm. and you're immersing yourself into what you're being shown, where I think this really worked, like, on your television as if you were just watching it. I also highly suggest, I've done both, so I rewatched this today when it was light out, and when I originally watched this, I watched it, like, in the middle of the night. Don't watch it in the day. because, I mean, you want to be immersed, and B, if you have any sunlight hitting your TV, this, you might as well just be looking at nothing.
You won't see shit.
Yeah, you won't see anything. But yeah, I mean, like you said, it's kind of hard with the spoiler-free because there's not, you know, this is a very slow burn. This is the most slow burn movie we've ever talked about, I think.
100%.
Yeah. So you've got to be into that, and you've got to be into, I think, kind of non-traditional horror stuff. This is, you know, super lo-fi. You know, if you're into like that lo-fi analog YouTube horror, you know, this is going to be your jam. If you're not, then, you know, you're probably gonna hate this with the rest of the haters, and I until the spoiler section, I'll leave it to I would say I'd recommend it. Like, I think it's pretty interesting artistically, and, you know, for me, it unsettled me. What about you, Jill? What were your spoiler free thoughts, and would you recommend it?
All right, so going back to what you said, I had no idea what to expect. I knew it was gonna be creepy and scary and somewhat paranormal and maybe some type of found footage thing like you suggested, like Blair Witch. But my friends, they went to go see it in theater, and they actually got me to watch it. And we were actually in the mountains in this like Airbnb, and we kept hearing noises all the time just from like the creaking of the house. And it was really late at night when we watched it, so it was very unsettling. I've not been that scared in a very long time watching a horror film, like actually covering my eyes and the very loud like sounds, the screeching and stuff. I also watched this with subtitles on top of the subtitles that are already there. And and I think that made it even more unsettling because I knew when there was going to be like a shriek or when they're going to say something in a weird voice. But it never came when you thought it was going to come. Like, it wasn't a very good like indicator of when they were going to say it. And that scared the shit out of me like even more. So like you said, very, very slow burn, but you have to go into it open-minded, which I did. And once you accept it for what it is and just embrace it, I think you'll really enjoy how different of an experience it is, because it really is an experience where there's so much tension and it is unsettling. There's not much going on, but you have to like really... I don't know, really just embrace that. But going back to the theater thing that you were talking about, the reason why I think, because I haven't seen it in theater, but I think it would be good in the theater because even though it's like an analog-y type of video, I don't know, I feel like everything would be amplified, like the sound and... I don't know.
Yeah, the sound of the teenagers behind you on TikTok would be amplified. All right. The guy eating the popcorn a couple of seats over.
Fuck you. Fuck you, Colton. Go ahead with your opinion. Jesus Christ.
No, do you recommend it? Did you say that?
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Sorry.
I butt in over top. I was cracking a joke. Yeah, did you recommend not? Or?
I do recommend it. It's not going to be everyone's cup of tea, but if you're able to open your mind, like we said, it is an experience for sure. So, yeah, totally recommend it. What about you, Colton?
Yeah, I watched it in kind of the way that I see a lot of people saying this, which is why I knew going in that this was going to be probably a boring movie, is what I'll say. Just because everyone said, watch this at, you know, 1:30 in the morning in pitch black with, you know, headphones on. That's how you'll get the most out of it. So I did just that. You know, I booted up last night at like 1:30 in the morning with my wireless surround sound headphones on my big ass TV in the pitch black. And
baller.
It was an interesting experience, like... It's kind of like a wandering eye movie where I'm just kind of looking around like the screen all the time, kind of scouring to see what's going to happen next. And there's so much film grain on this thing that it's kind of feels like your eyes are like playing tricks on you like while you're watching it. It's kind of like that feeling in real life where you feel like you see movement out of the corner of your eye, or, you know, when you get like those little specks floating around in your eyes when you look at the sun for too long or something. It's almost like that vibe in a movie. I'll kind of parrot what you guys said. Like, I do think it was actually quite unsettling and frightening as well. I really enjoyed how a lot of the movie seemed to be from like a child's height or from point of view, and kind of really exemplified like those fears of the dark or of being home alone or where are your parents? Are they running late? You know, all those kind of ideas that go through your head as a kid. I really enjoyed that. But I will also mention that it's a very much a movie that makes you work for it. It's kind of like the more you put in and the more you pay attention, the more you lean in, probably the more engrossed you'll be in it. So, yeah, it was definitely a different experience. I do recommend it. I think it's worth everyone seeing at least once under the right circumstances, kind of like with the preface, like, you know what you're getting into. I wouldn't recommend it to just anybody. It's like, oh, if you want this unique experience, if you're kind of open to a more very, very slow burn, maybe even boring sometimes or dull sometimes horror movie that's experimental, that's going to kind of, I don't know, kind of pry at, like, that feeling of being scared of the dark as a kid, I'd recommend it. But it's not, like, a full-blown recommendation, I guess. So, yeah, I guess that's a recommendation from Jill and Rowan, and kind of, like, a qualified recommendation from myself. But with that, let's cut to the spoiler discussion for Skinamarink. So, we are now in the spoiler discussion for Skinamarink. So, if you have not seen the movie, it's doubly time to tune out and come back once you've seen it. Or keep listening if you simply don't care. And Jill, how about you kick off our spoiler discussion? Is there anything that you've just kind of can't wait to get off your chest?
Well, I will say I was very inebriated when I watched it. And
okay. You saved that for the spoiler discussion.
Yep. Well, because when I was watching it, I didn't really catch on to like how paranormal it was. I was like, oh, this is about child abuse. And this is like some artsy movie about child abuse. And then I watched more, and obviously it could be linked to that somehow. And I think this was actually filmed in the director's childhood home. So yeah, maybe there's elements of that. But I'm doing the English thing where I'm like, English teacher must find meaning. But yeah. I think it's much more than that. But obviously I figure that out after watching it and letting it sit and process. And yeah, very spooky. It also kind of reminded me of Coraline a little bit. And like you guys were kind of talking about, like, not being able to find your parents and stuff. But it took me a long time, personally. I'm kind of stupid to, like, figure out what was going on. Yeah, that's all I got. What about you, Colton?
Yeah, I was a little bit confused, I would say, for probably the first 20 or 30 minutes, just because it is a very, very, very slow burn before anything kind of directly happens on camera that's kind of unsettling. Like, I think the first thing I noticed was maybe the chair on the ceiling or something. I think that comes before, like, the throbbing, like, whoom, 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 whoom.
Again, showing, with the, like, throbbing.
Showing that a door is there and now it's gone, or a window's there and now it's gone. Like, I think that comes before. And obviously the kid falls down the stairs, but I couldn't really make out the phone conversation that, you know, came after that. So I wasn't 100% sure what was going on there. But yeah, it's I didn't get the child abuse angle from it. I got the spousal abuse angle from it, which is kind of similar, but kind of like that one scene where the entity, or whatever you want to call it, calls Casey up to the bedroom and gets her to, or Kaylee, sorry, to, like, look under the bed. And then you see, like, the father sitting on one side, and she comes up, and the mother's sitting on the other side, and the mother goes into the other room and gets assaulted by something. You know, I was kind of like, all right, there's something on the go here. I'm not 100% sure what, but yeah, I thought that was pretty good. Rowan, what was the part of the movie that unsettled you? Like, was there a specific jump scare or a specific moment that you're like, fuck, man, this is kind of scary?
I mean, once I was like 10 minutes into it, I haven't been this unsettled.
10 minutes in.
Like,
wow.
I was unsettled pretty much from the get-go. I was like 100% bought in, immersed. And I think just the stillness in the of it is unsettling, because, like you said, Jill, like, you know, there is like a couple of these, you know, YouTube lo-fi jump scares in it, but they never come when you think they're coming. And I mean, you really don't get those till, like, really into this movie. And I mean, this movie's like, what, an hour and 40 or something? Yeah, like, I just, you know, you had brought it up, Colton. A lot of it was me just like, I'm looking at the screen, I'm like, do I see something moving, or is this the filter, or is this just me looking at all these blacks and being on camera? And it just, the whole thing was unsettling. Now, I didn't put the subtitles on, which I think kind of added to my uneasiness.
Yeah, I never had mine on either.
And
so
scaredness.
I was trying to, like, kind of pick it out. Yeah, in the headset. I was like, am I supposed to understand this perfectly? Or is it supposed to be like when a child's speaking, where you kind of get every other word and you're trying to piece it together, you know?
Yeah, and that was kind of my thing. Like, there'd be times if it was really soft, I was like, I have no idea what they said, but, like, it just added to the creepiness. Now, obviously, like, when I went back and watched it the second time, I did turn on the subtitles, because I was like, all right, I want to see, like, what I'm missing dialogue-wise. And then I was also going to say, yeah, I kind of was getting, I was getting both the vibes you guys were from the story of, like, separation and child abuse. I guess, you know, in any of those situations, like, just this overwhelming theme of, like, grief and dealing with grief. I think I took it almost on a more literal of just, like, dealing with, like, death. And maybe I had read about this being shot in his childhood home. So I kind of thought, like, maybe I was kind of getting just kind of like the death, not only literally, but, like, the death of your childhood, the death of kind of, like, of this childhood home and memories or nightmares that are made in this home. And then I also thought, like, obviously I don't know anything about the director, but I kind of got a vibe of, like, maybe some undertoning, like, divorce stuff in this. Especially, I was thinking about, like, with the phone call where we have the dad, like, kind of calls and say that the son, like, fell down. But it kind of, I got the vibe that it was, like, one of those calls that maybe the kids were with him, and then it was, like, calling the wife to say, this
inform the other parent
what's going on. Now, I will say, I did, you know, I was looking at some other thoughts that, you know, I was like, I wonder if other people are getting, like, just totally random things from this. And I didn't really think about it at first, but people were also discussing, like, the literal thing of, like, this kid being in a coma, and that maybe this was, like, that actually a lot of these conversations, even though they're warped by the demon and all this kind of stuff, that these are things like he's hearing being discussed outside of, you know, in the real world, not in this like coma induced dream world. And then obviously at the end, like, I think the director made it pretty clear, like, at the end, like, the kid dies, like, we get the multiple blood spatter effect going on there.
And it's also, like, a loop there, though. It's, like, it's, like, eternal, like, he's going through it over and over again, and it's, like, 500 and something days later.
Yeah, well, and that was kind of the other kind of thing where I was like, oh, yeah, that kind of makes sense, because we randomly just kind of have these numbers or whatever. And then I was like, okay, yeah, if he's like in a coma or something, this would make sense, like, that it is just this day in, day out loop of it.
Yeah, I kind of wonder if it's actually that literal, though. That seems like just people grasping for meaning. Like, I think literally what this director did was kind of make a cool tone poem that's an hour and 40 minutes long. Like, he kind of just left it ambiguous and open to a bunch of different readings, essentially, right? I don't know if it's, like, as simple as, like, oh yeah, the, you know, Kevin fell down the stairs in the first 10 minutes and now he's in a coma for the rest of the movie and this is just, like, a dream reality or a nightmare. Like, I wonder if you actually listen to all the dialogue, if that makes sense to someone in a coma on a hospital bed, or is that just somebody like kind of rationalizing it? Because similarly, like where you kind of said at the end, like very much like the kid dies, it's kind of like, well, right at the very end you see Kevin asking the entity like what's its name, right? You don't really get an answer at all. Like, he asks it twice and doesn't get his name. So it's just kind of like, I don't know, maybe it's just he has to live with whatever this thing is. Like, it shows basically that he could have been just floating in darkness for 572 days, right? Because that subtitle doesn't come up until he walks on the ceiling and goes through the door and, you know, kind of floats away into space a little bit. And that kind of brings me to, like, one of my criticisms of the movie is that I feel like there was, like, three or four moments where I thought the movie was ending and then it just kept going. Like, specifically, I think the first time was when he went in the room and kind of floated away and you see, like, the hallway getting further and further and further and then it just all goes black. And I was like, okay, that's an interesting ending. And then I think it goes to, like, Kaylee sitting on a bed a couple minutes later and she's, like, kind of merging with the film grain and kind of phasing in and out. And then she ultimately disappears, I'm pretty sure. And I'm like, okay, that's interesting as well. And then I was like, okay, here's the hallway full of Legos on the ceiling shot, and they're all, like, gathered up, and that's the one where it says 572 days, and I'm like, okay, is it just everything's gathering up there for that long? That's kind of weird. There's just, like, so many different little moments, like, especially within the last 10 minutes, that it feels like an ending. So I liked it, where it ultimately ended in the end. Like, I was like, oh, the what's your name thing is cool. I like that you can't really see the entity's face. It's all, like, really obscured in the film grain, like, just straight up can't make any defining features. Yeah, it felt a little bit long, I guess, in the end. It's funny to say it feels long because the whole thing is so slow moving, but this is one that I feel like an hour and 20 would have been, like, perfect for me. I think, like, it was just, there's aspects to it where it just goes on a little long. Obviously you want to languish a little bit and, like, stare at the screen, but there is, like, probably 30 minutes before even anything horror happens, I would say, in this movie.
Yeah, well, and I was gonna say, I thought, like, it's kind of, you know, for Kyle Ball, like, it's kind of a very difficult task, because I agree with you, like, you know, it probably would have been nice to shave it down a bit, but also with something so filmed so oddly, like, you also need that time, like, because we go over and over the same corners, the same hallway, like, to kind of get the audience, like, okay, like, I kind of know somewhat the layout of this house and, like, what things are supposed to look like, as opposed to, like, then I can tell what's out of place. I was gonna say, you know, we were talking about just kind of, like, or I did, about the dread and just terror I felt watching it. I like some of his decisions where, you know, when the kids were opening doors and stuff, that we had that all, like, we'd have that far right of the actual shot. So, like, you're just staring at a wall, and then, like, in the corner of your eye is what actually is happening in the scene. And, like, I just thought that was, like, so well done, where it really kind of misdirected you to where you're looking. Like, I'm staring at the wall, I'm like, something's gonna disappear, show up on this wall, and really, you know, it's just a kid opening a door, shutting a door, this entity opening and shutting a door, and it just, like, really, I thought that really helped creating the dread. Like I said before, just the angles, like, making them awkward and making you feel awkward.
That kind of brings me to another point. Jill, I want to get your input on this a little bit as well. Do you guys feel at all that the movie was kind of cheating a little bit with its scares, with its horrors? Like, there is numerous jump scares in this movie, and especially if you're wearing something like headphones, everything is mixed at, like, I don't know, let's say a 50 out of 100 on the audio level, and then it'll just peak. Like, it'll literally go, like, 100 out of 100, and then, like, a moment's notice just for, like, a big squeal or a big noise, and a lot of modern horror movies get criticized for that. And I mean, this movie here kind of does it half a dozen times as well. And they're probably even more effective because, like Rowan just said, you're staring at a wall, then all of a sudden you're staring at a kid that has no eyes and no mouth, and there's like a screaming noise or something, right? It's just like, yeah. How did you feel about those scares? Were they a little cheap, or do you like them? How'd you feel?
I don't think it was too cheap. It was fucking terrifying. And
agreed,
I think that
it just
sits with like the whole like tone of the film. Like it's going to be long. It's a slow burn. You've got those really unsettling sounds and then those unsettling shots. And then you zoom in really close to something that's kind of a jump scare or really scary. But you're also waiting for something to happen that doesn't happen, and that makes it even more scary. So I fucking hated those noises. Like every time it happened, I was just like, please don't do it again, please don't do it again, and do it again, and I'd freak the fuck out. So like I hated it, but like in a good way, I guess.
Well, what I was gonna say is like, no, I felt the same way, that I was kind of like, oh man, I don't really want it to happen again, which obviously it makes the movie really work. Like there's a part in this movie where I adjusted like my sound settings because I was like, man, there's just that constant audio hiss. Like, that can't be what it's supposed to be. And then, like, I checked out a couple of different versions, and I was like, no, they all have, like, that hissing audio. All right, I'll just leave it, I guess. And there was a moment during the movie where I was like, sounds like someone's on, like, my front step. Like, just, like, 10 feet away from me outside the window. Like, what is going on? Like, of course, someone would be trying to get in my house when I got, like, headphones on and everything. But, of course, nobody was there. So it was kind of, like, playing tricks on me. So there were aspects where I probably would describe it as cheap, because it's such a quiet movie, then all of a sudden it's just, like, crazy for a second or two, and then it's back to quiet again for 20 minutes. But Rowan, I think I kind of walked over you. You wanted to say something as well.
To me, I guess you could classify the scares as cheap, but I think that's the brand. I mean, like this to me is really like the, like, I'm trying to think how to describe it. I think about when we watch Bodies, 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 and you know, everyone talked about like, oh, this horror movie, like, you know, about Gen X, you know, all this stuff. This is a movie, like, made by Gen X. This is the YouTube kids. Like, I remember, you know, I would have been older, like, high school, coming out of high school. But, like, this was the shit that went viral. You'd be watching some stupid commercial, and then, like, you know, Samara from The Ring would pop up on the screen, and it would just be peak audio screaming. And it was just, like, cheap YouTube jump scares. And to me, this is like that coming into the filmmakers, into fruition. Like, this is kind of that, like, viral media, social media age. And this is like, to me, this is kind of, I think, like the beginning of this, really. This is kind of the first film I think that has really embodied that. I did at some point in this, I guess now, I did want to recommend, like, this heavily, there's no way this guy wasn't influenced by the Mandela catalog, which actually was kind of also a viral sensation about 2-3 years ago. It was a YouTube creator. I remember like Variety, like all these huge publications did articles on this teenager, 16 years old, that literally made kind of the exact same thing. It's a YouTube, like, just static image, a little bit of video, but like jump scares. The thing's like hours and hours long, and studios were like just salivating trying to get this 16-year-old kid money to make a movie, because it had like millions and millions of views, and like that was really, I think, the blueprint for this film. So like, definitely check it out. It's like super analog. I just thought, you know, I think the jump scares did what they were supposed to do. And like, you know, I enjoyed them.
Yeah, I think it was just worth bringing up just because that is a pretty constant criticism people level at modern horror movies. That's all. Yeah, go ahead, Jill.
Two things. First of all, you better include millennials in that, Mr. Old Man.
Oh, it's definitely more so millennials rather than Gen X. It's definitely millennials, especially since it's set in, what, 95, you know?
Yeah.
But anyways, yeah.
Secondly, I don't know if I don't think we've talked about it yet, but the short Heck on YouTube, is that by the same director?
Yeah.
Like, I haven't seen it either. I was gonna watch it, but I didn't have time. But I heard that you could basically watch this if you wanted to instead of Skinamarink and get the same kind of experience. So
that's what I heard as well, that basically Heck was kind of like a proof of concept for Skinamarink, and that this director has done numerous like shorts on YouTube where I think he would kind of adapt people's nightmares or whatnot that he'd read on Reddit, and some of them are more successful than others, and I think Heck was one of the more successful ones. So with the success of that, he was able to take it and with $15,000 and kind of slap this thing together, and I think it went way more wide than he ever expected, considering I think it made $2 million in the box office, so it's quite impressive. But yeah, I guess the last thing I kind of want to mention before we get into rating this thing is just literally two more moments that scared me, just because I think it's worth just go through everything scary and just completely spoil this movie for anybody who wants to listen to our discussion. When the chatter phone rolls up and you're just looking at it, and I'm like, okay, this goofy thing, I've seen posts about this on Twitter. I've seen the screen caps. I've seen, you know, some artists do their renditions of it. I'm like, what is this little thing gonna do? Then the fact that it just makes like a shrill noise and its eyes move like subtly, like just a quick cut. And it's almost like a goofy edit too. It's like probably something you do in Photoshop, right? Just move its eyes. I don't know. It got me. I definitely jumped at it, which once again, I never jump at horror movies anymore. Like anything I go see in theaters, all the beats are so like you can basically time them all out. This thing just does not follow any beats. It just goes to the beat of its own drum. It's just completely different. All the photos of the people with the obscured faces and missing heads and all that stuff, I thought that was pretty unsettling too. That's like another one of those things right at the end of the movie that's kind of said without, you know, any interpretation, or we don't really know 100% what it's trying to say. But that was another thing I was like, yeah, that's unsettling. And it reminded me of kind of those old videos I'd watch on YouTube, like the Marble Hornets videos, you know, when like Slender Man was really popular. I'd watch all those, and it was just kind of like this long process of found footage and just sketchy things that, you know, it was like startling images and weird sounds that like only makes sense if you're like really deep in the lore. And there was aspects of this where I was like, yeah, I think this was a millennial kid who grew up on a lot of those things. But yeah, there's a couple of things I wanted to mention before we got out of this.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else you guys want to mention before we go to review this, score this?
I agree with you about that phone, especially was it under the bed and its eyes are there? That was the scariest shit ever for me. Yeah. But also, I also want to bring up the title, because like I said, I watched this with a bunch of Americans, and they weren't familiar with the Canadian kids TV show, I guess it's called The Elephant Show, with Sharon, Lois, and Bran. And what do you guys think of the significance of the title? Can we tie it into the movie? Like, what do you guys think of that?
I think so. It's just one of those songs that's really catchy. We could probably all at least hum it or sing the words to some degree and the rhythm of it, that it just kind of brings you back to those childhood times that I don't think any of us hear anymore. So it is kind of like what a lot of this movie is trying to do, is trying to emulate a style from his childhood and like the fears of your childhood that you're used to. It's just like another one of those like weird thoughts or weird songs that I've just filed away like deep in the recesses of your mind. But it's like, oh, when I saw, you know, or first heard the title Skinamarink, I was like, oh, I wonder if that has anything to do with that, you know, old children's TV show.
That's a great answer.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's kind of the same for me. Like, I kind of thought, you know, I think about American filmmakers that always, you know, you do their nods to like Americana and giving this like nostalgia feel, where like this is our Canadiana, where it's like, where it's something that you can like really connect, you know, and be like, yeah, like, I know you're from Canada because you remember that show, you remember this song, like, and I think, you know, it's just interesting to do that and to tie something so innocently in. Although I did think, I was like, I wonder if he's going to, you know, do the Jordan Peele where he'll just get the song, like, chopped and screwed and then just play it in the movie, but
No such luck. No.
Those three must be asking a lot of money for the royalties to a hit song like that. So
yeah, should have been over the credits, which I don't think there was any credits. But if there were, it should have had Skinamarink playing over it. And with that, I guess we'll just get into rating this. So if you're new to the podcast, our review rubric is nay, okay, yay, or slay. So Rowan, let's start with you. What would you give Skinamarink?
So I'm going to give it a slay.
Holy shit.
I'm going big, guys. Second time watching it, just as good. Like I said in the review, this was probably the most scared I've been in a long time watching a movie. I don't think I've seen a scary movie since I saw Sinister for the first time. And that movie scared the shit out of me. So this one, I was uneasy the entire time. I guess a really odd comparison, because it was recent, was I just recently watched that Fall movie, and I'm scared of heights, so I was also uneasy that entire movie. But it was like the same kind of feeling, like I was queasy, I was just like, just totally put off in a good way, and I didn't know what to expect. And I enjoyed it. Is it a little long? Yes. But I also think that's all part of that YouTube aesthetic, because these YouTube analog videos are fucking massive. They're like 6-7 hours long, and you're just looking at pictures, the same pictures, for 40 minutes over and over again. I always call it the Tim and Eric awkwardness. Like, it's just like, how long can you look at the same thing till you're, like, unsettled, kind of laughing, and just like, what is going on? So yeah, I had a ball with this. Slay all day. Jill, what would you rate it?
I'm a little undecided. I'm between an okay and a slay. Not a slay, Jesus, sorry. An okay and a yay.
You're in between a nay and a slay.
mostly because, like you said, it's long, but I think it does need to be long to portray that sense of dread. But at the same time, I was like, is it over yet? Like Colton kind of mentioned when Kaylee is like on the bed and fading away, I was like, oh, it's over. And it wasn't over. And I was like really tired. And I was like, okay, I need to go to bed. When is this going to be over? but if, you know, apart from that, for what it is, I really enjoyed the experience. And like you, I haven't been that scared in a while. But it is a whole lot of experience. So yeah, still, I don't know. Okay, yay. In the middle. What about you, Colton?
Oh my God, you're going to be in the middle. You're not going to lean one way or the other?
No, I can't. It's not in me.
Oh my God. All right, well, I mean, I'm kind of... That is pretty terrible. That might be a first for the show. I'm not sure. We'll have to go back and check the tapes. But yeah, I'm like yourself. I was kind of in between an okay and a yay. But for me, I think the fact that it did actually scare me, and it was unique enough that I haven't seen it before, and even though I was a little bit bored at times and kind of had to like sit up straight and really lean in to make sure I never fell asleep or missed a second of it, I think it did still have a lot to admire. Like I said, I did like the kind of 90s aesthetic. I liked a lot of what it said and kind of harkened back to like my own childhood fears and whatnot. You know, it's quite an accomplishment for a film to kind of put you in that headspace again, kind of evoke that feeling, especially like our childhood specifically with the old CRT TVs and the time before the internet and having to play with toys on these shitty carpets and these wood paneled walls and all that stuff. It was quite nostalgic in that way. Yeah, I don't know if it's something I'd watch again, but I am glad I've watched it. So I think I'm going to give it the, you know, the softest of yays. You know, it's right on the cusp, but I'll give it a very, very light yay. Because I give a lot okays, and it is a little bit more special than, you know, 70% of the movies I watch and give an okay to. So
I'll give it a soft yay as well.
Thank you, Jill.
That's the spirit. All
right. And if you made it this far in the show and you're not following us already, you can do so at It Slays Podcast. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, Slasher, I don't know. Basically, if there's a social media, we're there at It Slays Podcast. And Rowan, go ahead and tell the people about the playlist.
Yeah, so you can go on Spotify and look up the It Slays Podcast Horrific Playlist. If you have any problems finding it, you go to any social media, and our link tree has a link directly to it. We add music from movies we review, or iconic horror movies, or just horror movies we love. And it can be, you know, licensed music, score. I don't know, maybe I just put Skin and Meringue on the playlist.
Yes.
Don't do that.
Just the children's song. That'd be great.
But yeah, go check that out and get your spooky music on.
And next time on the show, I'm not quite sure what we're going to be doing yet. I have a few things jotted down. There's a few things floating around the periphery, but I'm not 100% sure if they'll fit in. At the very least, we'll 100% be back for Scream 6, no matter what. But I have a feeling something will crop up before then. So we'll just have to wait and see. And with that, I think that about wraps things up for this episode. So until next time, I'm Colton.
I'm Rowan.
I'm Jill.
And as long as you keep listening, we'll keep slaying.